worms crawl in, the worms crawl out. They'll eat your guts and spit them out. And when your bones begin to rot, the worms remain, but you do not. So don't ever laugh as a hearse goes by, for someday you'll be next in line. And when death brings his cold despair, ask yourself, will anyone care?
Macabre may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Well, hello and welcome to Macabre. We are feeling a little scrungly this morning, so it's going to be a good ride. It's just been a little... Oh,
before we jump in, I did tell you I was at the German Fest last night.
That's so cool.
So you were at a festival. I was also at a festival, but I didn't party as hard as you did. So,
oh, missed opportunity.
I know, but
you
I was
drank
on
beer. Right?
I did. I was on bestie duty, so I was watching out for the bestie so she could have a fun time.
Nice.
So that's why I look fresh faced.
Heck yeah!
I only had two beers, so I was responsible.
Nice.
But, you know,
where'd you go?
But I didn't realize how big the German festival was. It's a tiny town, so more people come to the German festival than are actually in the town.
Really?
And they come from everywhere.
That's so cool.
But anyways, are the Grimm brothers, are they German or are they Austrian?
They're German.
Yeah. Okay. Yes! So I had to throw that in there before we started. I was like, I was at the German fest last night. And also next year, I'm getting in the Stein holding contest.
Yes.
So my guy friend and I have a pact because we started lifting recently. So next year we're both going to enter the Stein holding contest, and our goal is for both of us to win in our categories. Cause the time frame isn't that high. And I was like, I'm going to just get jacked and win that contest next year. So listeners, mark my words. I'm going to win that contest next year.
Heck yes. I'm giving you a virtual high five right now. You freaking got this.
But anyways, in the spirit of the Germans, before we get into the story of the Grimm brothers, I was at the German Fest last night.
I guess. What else did they have?
Oh, man. They have, like, a bunch of German food. They have music. They have, like, all kinds of stuff. It's been going on for years.
That's so cool.
They had some kind of big raffle I didn't know about that gave away, like, $20,000 to one person. They had a bunch of other prizes. Yeah, they do all kinds of stuff, but it's just it's basically a lot of drinking.
Oh, heck yes.
A lot of good food. So they had like sauerkraut balls and you know, all the German food you can think of, like bratwurst and Rubens and all the deliciousness. I had corn on the cob and sauerkraut, and I had a bratwurst, and I got my fill.
Yum! Do you have schnitzel?
They did have schnitzel, but I did not have it.
Oh, that sounds really good. Heck yeah! Shout out to German Fest.
Sorry to interrupt. We might have to and go back to the intro.
Oh no! Keep that in. Keep that in.
But,
I love it.
But you know, I had to talk about the festivities too.
Heck yeah, it's fitting. It's very fitting. We're keeping it in.
Okay.
Listeners, I'm sorry, but it's one of those mornings because we are recording in the morning and we're having a time. You can't fault us for having a great time over the weekend.
Some of us more than others.
It's going to be a fun episode because we're both in like a mood. It's going to be good. But welcome. We are Macabre, a dark history podcast. I'm Blair.
I'm Hallie.
And if you're new here, sorry. We don't typically go off on this much of a random rant. But, you know, it's good that you kind of get a little background on us and what we've been up to. So how do you do? And thank you very much. Thank you very much for choosing Macabre as your entertainment of the hour. Today we are talking about brides, trees, sausages, Oh my. Of course, we are talking about grim fairy tales. So my hype notes for today are, hang on to your ears. It's about to get grim up in here. Over the years, fairy tales have really become washed down with niceties, and the dark origins seem to get lost with every generation that passes. So join us as we talk about the Grimm brothers and the uproar over one lone sausage.
isn't that always the case?
Yes. It is. I thought that was funny. You're talking about bratwurst and stuff, and it's like, mm-hmm.
There's always a sausage causing problems.
Always. Always. Oh, all right. Let's get grim up in here, baby. There's a lot of sausage talk today. Later. So we can't really talk about the stories until we get a little background on the Grimm brothers. There's so much stuff I did not know about them when researching them. So how in the heck did they go from where they were to how it is still today? Well, Jakob Ludwig Carl Grimm was born on January 4th of 1785 in Hesse Kassel, Germany. The year after that, Wilhelm Carl Grimm was born on February 24th. Together, they would be known as the Brothers Grimm, but they didn't become the folklorists and linguists that they were known to be right out of the womb. So how did that happen? These two were the oldest children of their family. Their father, Philip Wilhelm, was a lawyer and a town clerk. And at one time, their father and grandfather were both ministers in the area as well. So they were pretty big community figures. Just already. In 1796, though, their father did pass away and left the family with quite a few hardships. Now, Jakob and Wilhelm both decided that they wanted to follow in their father's footsteps and go to the University of Marburg to study law. And they intended wholly to enter the civil service when their schooling was complete. So, not on the literary track at that point at all. But we have the University of Marburg to thank for their interest in folklore, because that's where they were introduced to those things. So they became enamored with folk poetry almost immediately after joining the university. They were influenced by a few people. We have German author Clemens Brentano. We have German jurist and historian Friedrich Karl von Savigny. And German philosopher Johann Gottfried von Herder. Jakob went to Paris with Frederick in 1805 to research manuscripts dating back to the Middle Ages. A year after that, he became the Secretary of War in Kassel. We're going to be talking a lot of politics moving forward with them. And that actually plays a big role into what we got out of them for fairy tales. But we'll get into that. When the French came in 1806, he was appointed the private librarian to King Jerome of Westphalia, who happened to be Napoleon's younger brother.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Napoleon needs his own episode. I kind of want to humiliate him a wee bit with that whole little romance novel he wrote that got intercepted by the British, but that's for another time. Jakob really moved around in the job field doing all kinds of things during this time, because Europe at this time was freaking wild when it came to war, politics, changing in governments, changing in leadership. It was a freaking nightmare. What we have to remember about this time frame in Germany specifically was that there were factions. Germany wasn't really a united state yet. War and change were a constant for the Grimm brothers. So, of course, we bring this up because Jakob and Wilhelm were involved with the political scene more than you may think. At one time, they were actually very popular, influential figures in the government. In 1808, their mother had passed away. and this left 23-year-old Jakob to take care of his four brothers and one sister, and things got even harder for the Grimm family. Wilhelm was not the perfect bill of health, so he remained unemployed for some time, basically until 1814, when he became the secretary at the Elector's Library in Kassel. After Napoleon's defeat, Jakob went to Paris between 1814 and 1815 twice to recover books and paintings that were originally taken by the French. He's kind of like a, I shouldn't say like necessarily an Indiana Jones, but like kind of, you know, like pay up. We're coming back for this stuff. This guy also took part in the Congress of Vienna. If you're not familiar with the Congress of Vienna, this was the assembly that pretty much gave Europe a facelift after Napoleon just kind of like did it on him, you know? In 1816, Jakob joined his brother at the Elector's Library. And it wasn't long after this that both brothers decided they didn't want to do the whole legal thing anymore. They're like, fuck that. they wanted to pursue their passions instead, because life's too short. So, of course, they went to folk poetry. To them, this was the only true way to show and express the culture that was humankind. And this was very important to them, because they felt that with everything going on with the political scene, that it was very hard to keep your identity as a person and where you came from, because you were constantly being pushed between leaders, kings, all kinds of stuff. So this became very important to them, and it kind of also kind of became political in a weird way, even though we're talking about literature here. So, of course, as we've been talking about heavily so far, war leaves nothing untouched, and the Grimm brothers were no exception. And there had been so many changes and challenges that had impacted not just them, but the people during this time, socially, politically, you name it. It just was an upheaval. But Jakob and Wilhelm wanted to get back to the roots, not to live in the past, but to celebrate it, to celebrate culture. In their later collections of stories, it definitely portrayed the political storms of the time. They kind of hid a little bit of it in some of their works, but it should be noted that they did not write the fairy tales. They documented them. They tried to stay true to how these tales were recounted to them. And most of the stories they were collecting were basically only oral accounts that were passed down through actual full centuries before they collected these. So we're getting some pretty old stories. Their first collection actually didn't just derive from German culture. They were taking different stories from all over Europe, places like the Netherlands, Scandinavia, France. And then you would find that they had specifically chosen the German culture for their second volume of fairy tales. So for those of you who don't know, they did not publish one thick volume at one time. They did little sections and collections throughout, and they would be different for each one. So some stories were portrayed as just centuries worth of culture in just a few pages when documenting. And sometimes this was really difficult to try to nail when you're trying to figure out how to fully document these things so that they weren't going to be forgotten later. Wilhelm had a talent of making these accounts readable in story format without taking away any of the uniqueness of the character or the story itself for each story, which that's pretty talented. This model of documentation for folklore and folktales around the world is still used globally today because it's the most effective. And speaking of globally, the brothers' hard work paid off tenfold. Their collections were a hit, and due to how they collected and investigated the tales, it's actually considered a technical science. Their accounts are kind of in technical terms, because I know some people are really like, that's not science. It's a liberal science, but it's technically the earliest scientific collection that we have of folklore and literature. which I found really interesting.
Yeah.
While their first collection of stories, we kind of mentioned, were spanned throughout Europe, their second collection was the more local legends that came from around Germany. They also revived ancient texts, making new additions for their studies at random locations throughout, like, the Middle Ages, like, which I did not know about them. I knew they were linguists and folklorists, but, like, I didn't realize that they were taking really old texts and making sure that people can still study them, and that's so cool.
Yeah, this is all news to me. I thought they just made up stories.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I just thought all the stories were just stuff that they wrote, like Stephen King would write a story.
Right.
I didn't know that they did all this research. And
yeah, they
so
were.
So this is all new to me.
Yeah, they traveled, which to me, I think makes it scarier because some of these stories in there are so old. It's like, where are these origins deriving from that originally caused these stories?
Yeah, well, especially when we get into some of the stories,
mm-hmm.
it's even mm-hmm. scarier now that I know the backstory.
Right?
I did not know the backstory. I just thought they were creepy stories.
Right? Oh, it's so going to get worse.
Oh,
I found out some stuff that I can't wait to tell you because I think some stuff is going to loop back to what we've kind of talked about before. So just like, oh, it's going to be good. I'm so excited. Well, now that I know you don't know this, I'm like, oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah,
So for time's sake, because I know I went hard on the history, I nerd, but to make things a little quicker and for time's sake, let's fast forward to 1829, when the brothers were entering their next era of adventure. Because there's a lot of collecting involved, obviously, throughout the years. So we're just going to fast forward to 1829. They ended up moving jobs over to the University of Göttingen after getting the shaft at their old job. Yeah, real hard shaft there. They were hired on as librarians and professors at the new college. And during this time, Jakob researched and recorded fairy tales and poetry that predated Christian influence on Germanic people. So he was going hard in the ancient text area. This would later be called the Deutsche Mythologie, which in deep contrast was, like, let's look at the mythology that we know. Like, when you hear the term classic mythology, you're probably thinking of Greek mythology
mm-hmm.
or
yeah.
Norse mythology. Yeah. This collection that he had recovered and recounted, recorded, was so different than what we know as classic mythology. And it was so different than what we know with a Christian influence. There was some pretty dark tales that he found, but also a lot of, I don't know how to put it, like, kind of think of King Arthur. You know, you've got a lot of magic. You have a lot of creatures in these tales that he recorded. More so than in mythologies, because a lot of our classic mythologies is like, well, it's not really magic. We might have a sorcerer in this one, but we're talking gods, you know?
Yeah.
It's not really anything of
I was thinking like Pan's Labyrinth style.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I thought was pretty interesting, because they, well, I mean, old. These things are old.
Well, if you think back about some of the other legends, if you go back to like the Middle Eastern
yes.
texts, I mean, you got yeah. genies, the djinn, you've got,
yep.
there's a lot of magic there.
Mm-hmm.
And that text definitely. Is ancient.
Oh, yeah.
And it will be heavily influenced, and magic was like central to that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. Which later, I know we've kind of discussed talking about Zoroastrianism, and that kind of comes from that origin. Some crazy stuff, because the Middle East is like the oldest part of documented world that we know. Well,
and that's allegedly the origins of life.
Exactly.
So,
and, oh, yeah, there's so much that we could talk about. I mean, like,
we may have to dip into some of the legends of the djinn and all that. Yes. Because that shit gets creepy.
It's so scary.
Yeah.
Like, some of those tales are way, way creepier than the Grimm tales, but oh, yeah. Yeah. There's some crazy stuff.
But I'll tell you what, you give me a genie lamp and I'm going to rub that fucker. I'm still going to rub that lamp.
Do you?
I'm taking that chance.
You care to share what one of your wishes would be?
Oh, goodness. We're not allowed to ask for more wishes.
Nope. Can't bring anybody back from the dead.
Can you ask for abilities?
Yes.
I would ask for the ability to teleport. But can you ask for the ability to teleport indefinitely? Like, you just have the ability, or can you only ask to do it once?
I think if you word it right, you can.
Okay, well, in my mind, I would have the ability to teleport indefinitely. That's just a skill that I had.
That's cool.
That would be one, because then I could always, you know, be able to do that.
Right? That is excellent. I love that.
Yeah, but that's just one. I can't tell you all of my secrets, people.
Oh, no. Yeah. That's like asking, like, what did you wish for? You can't do that. Otherwise, it won't come true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd probably be my first thing I would want granted, is I just want to be able to, you know, go wherever I want to go always quickly.
Oh, that'd be so cool. I love it. But yeah, talk about some really interesting, dark things. The Deutsche mythology, heavily influenced by superstitions. So what's interesting is we've kind of talked about some, not like ancient superstitions per se on the show, but like we've talked heavily about Romania and some of the stuff that comes out of Romanian culture, superstitions. Kind of think about the really old Germanic culture in that level of that's where you're getting your lycan origins from.
You've got just the hags,
yes,
right?
The hags too, yeah. Mm-hmm. So some pretty dark stuff coming out of the really ancient origins of Germanic culture, so they know what's up. Unfortunately, their fate, though, for the brothers, they were doing really well, things were going great, but their fate seemed to follow in their namesake, unfortunately, because it wasn't long until until another political change overshadowed their lives. Just getting going in another cool job that they like, and things come in to fuck shit up. We've got Ernest Augustus, who went from being the Duke of Cumberland to the King of Hanover. And long story short, and to put it in the most polite terms that you can, Ernest was a very conservative man, and he found that he wanted to make some changes while he was on the throne. So he scrapped the Constitution of 1833, which caused a pretty big uproar for people in Germany, because he found it to be too liberal. Well, this caused a major upset with the brothers. Like, 2 weeks after, Ernest was like, nah, bye. We're rewriting. The Grimm brothers and five other professors went and sent a protest to Ernest, stating that they felt bound by oath to the Constitution that he had decided to put a kibosh on. Ernest came back with a retort, saying, oh, you don't like that? Well, you can get the fuck out. So they're like, deuces. So they were actually exiled to Kassel for 3 years.
Aww.
Yeah. But during this time, many colleges tried obtaining their work. They were still trying to get them to work for them in some ways. They were just sought after. I mean, the brothers were really famous at this point. Like, people wanted them to work for them, to be friends with them, to, you know, help them. And so, I mean, that kind of helped them in a weird way, I guess, but they still dealt with some hardships because, you know, the upheaval of the time. But in 1840, they were invited to come to Berlin by the King of Prussia, Frederick Wilhelm IV, and they RSVP'd saying, "Oh mein Gute, we would love to." But JK, they probably didn't say it like that. He appointed them as members of the Royal Academy of Sciences.
Wow. And
yeah. Heck yeah. Look at them getting like all these little titles. Like, they get pushed around a lot, but they're like,
we're good.
Yeah. So they had been appointed that very high status. They were allowed to lecture at the university, like living the dream. It was here that they began to work on the large German dictionary. So that's another fun fact about them, is they kind of were the first ones on board making a dictionary for reference for people. It started in Germany. They would not live, unfortunately, to see that finished. Mm-hmm. It took so many generations to finish the dictionary. But so like approximately over 100 years.
Wow.
Since, yeah. Jakob lived to see the progress on this project get to the letter F. Wilhelm only finished the letter D. Their efforts on this project were widely acclaimed, and it picked up notice in other countries. Places like Britain, Switzerland, Sweden, France, and the Netherlands started making their own dictionaries, which is why we have what we have today for reference to not just words, cultural items, historical things. We can kind of owe that to the brothers. We could get more into the political standings and actions, but we don't have enough time to discuss it all. Just know that they were very passionate about their homeland, and without their involvement with governments and their passion for German culture, I don't think we'd be telling you the same story today, honestly. That just has to be noted. Like, Brothers Grimm and the fairy tales would not be what they are today without that drive from them. They were one of the, or among, I should say, not the most, but among the most important German scholars ever. Wilhelm passed away on December 16th of 1859. He had married Dorothea Wild, and they had four children. Jakob was born and died, unfortunately, in 1826. Hermann, who went to be a literary and art historian, he lived from 1828 to 1901. Rudolf, who became a jurist, lived from 1830 to 1889. And Augusta, who lived from 1832 to 1919. Jakob never married. He died on September 20th of 1863 in Berlin. Both brothers were buried in Alter St. Matthias Kirchhof in Germany. In Berlin, specifically. Duh, in Germany. In Berlin. So, okay. Okay, I'm done. I'm done with the history. The historical stuff. We can move on. Why don't we talk about some stories?
Question.
Yeah.
Do we know? I mean, obviously their last name is Grimm.
Mm-hmm.
Where did the word Grimm, the actual word as we know it today, when did that get its meaning?
Ooh, that's a good question. I didn't even think to look into that. I'm going to do that.
Let's look at it. We can pause for a second.
Because it'd be really cool if it was because of them. So technically, it's an old English term. So it says it's Proto-Germanic.
So what year are we talking?
Right? I want to get a better date on this because they're also bringing up like the Grim Reaper. That is also really interesting. So apparently, just kind of like a side tangent, It's a figurative phrase, the Grim Reaper, for death is attested by the 1847. Goes back to...
Oh, it goes way back, it says.
Yeah. So, okay. That means that we can attest them to be...
It can't be attributed to them.
Mm-mm. Right. But I just think it's very suiting and really funny that that would be the case.
Yeah.
Like, wouldn't that be something if it was?
I thought that'd
be awesome.
But that's
a really... Right? That was a really good question.
Says the earliest known use of the word as an adjective is from the Old English period before 1150. And the earliest known use as a noun is from the Middle English period between 1150 and 1500. The word's earliest evidence in writing is from around 1340 to 70 in Alexander and Dindymus.
Mm.
Fierce, savage, terrifying, repellent, violent, severe. So, yeah. But it That's is cool. interesting.
It
that
is.
They, having that last name, would take right. on that.
Right. How ironic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm. I like that you asked that, because I was like, why did I not look into this?
Fun fact, people.
Fun fact. The more you know.
Another macabre morsel.
Yeah, exactly. We're learning a lot of shit on this show. So... Speaking of stories, let's do some story time before we get into more macabre morsels. I can start with, there is a story called The Robber Bridegroom. It is noted as the darkest fairy tale that they have encountered.
Okay.
It's pretty dark. So I'm just going to summarize it because it is a little bit longer.
Okay.
So this story is about a daughter of a miller, and she becomes betrothed to a guy. And this guy seems really great. And he's like, oh, you know, yeah. We'll leave it at that. But he ends up inviting her to his house. You know, like, oh, yeah, you can come over and visit my home. You'll be able to see what your home will look like. And, you know, just seems like a good guy. Well, she decides to go. And she didn't tell everybody this, though. Okay.
She didn't follow the rules of the dating apps.
Nope. And when she gets to the threshold of the door to his home, she hears birds whispering to go back. Don't enter. Go back. It's not too late. You can go back. Turn back. And she's like, nah. And she decided to go in anyway. Then she hears an old woman say, go back. You need to turn back or you will find your death here. So now she's feeling a little bit more tense, not feeling too sure she made the right decision. So nobody was in the home. She had entered. He didn't even realize that she was coming that day. So she decides that she's going to hide herself in the house and wait to see what happens. Well, her fiance does end up returning, and he ends up returning with a gang of dudes. And when he came back, these gang of dudes and him had a girl, and they and they had kidnapped her. And in his house, where she was hiding from, the miller's daughter could see everything that was going on. The girl was tortured, taken out piece by piece, and killed by this group of guys. And, you know, her fiance had a huge role to play in what happened to this girl. So she managed to escape from the whole horror scene that was her fiance's house. But guess what? She still had to get married. So wedding day rolls around, and she's up at the altar with this guy. There's people witnessing, and she decides to tell everybody what he did. And she's telling little pieces at a time, just a few little sentences at a time. And he's starting to realize what she's doing. And so he kept trying to interrupt her, saying, "My darling, it was only a dream. That wasn't real. It was only a dream." Well, the robbers that were part of his little gang were also at this wedding. And so everybody that wasn't these people were like, what the shit, you know? And eventually she was able to get the whole story out. The families strung up the robbers and the fiance and completely executed them. What a wedding day!
This, yeah, sounds like a lot of these stories now, knowing and hearing this and knowing the stories that I picked, are very similar in theme.
There's some pretty weird shit.
Yeah, they're very dark. And I didn't watch, and we'll talk about this in a minute. Like, I didn't watch, like, the show that came out, the Grimm.
Oh, I hadn't either.
Series. So I don't know. Listeners probably maybe have seen that. But so I don't really know much about that show, but I heard it was good.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how, like, true it stuck to the stories. I'm sure they probably took some liberties, right, and maybe, like, you know, picked out some of the stories. And but you know, right, how,
it probably, you know, made TV it more is supernatural. Yeah.
Yeah. You know how TV is.
Yeah.
But yeah.
As weird as it, right? And as weird as it sounds, I think that even though they collected this as a folktale, you have to have a basis for a story. No matter if it's fiction or not, the basis comes from somewhere.
Like, I mean, my brain goes to, like, the Game of Thrones show, like, the Red Wedding, and all these things that, like, you, all these different stories that happened. It's like, it's not totally unbelievable that something like that could happen, you know?
No. This literally sounds like a true crime episode.
Oh, 100%. That was where my brain went. It's like, I mean, I've heard, like, you hear about the toy box killer, that one.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Stuff that happens in real life is way worse.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so yeah. So that's totally feasible that something like that could have happened.
Right? I have no doubt that this was somebody telling this story throughout the ages, kind of like in your small town having a story like, okay, back in grandpa's day, this guy, you know.
This shit went down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Ugh.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Well, I have one for you. I did not summarize.
Ooh, do tell it.
Yeah. So these are going to be long. These are going to be long, but I'm a pretty fast reader, so, you know, just bear with me.
I'm okay with that.
And we're going to do it storytelling style, so.
Heck yes.
So settle in, listeners. Okay. This first one is called The Fitcher's Bird.
Ooh.
So here we go. Once upon a time, in a land shadowed by dark forests and ancient secrets, there lived a sorcerer. This cunning sorcerer disguised himself as a poor, humble beggar, moving from house to house, capturing beautiful girls. So there's a theme here. No one knew where he took them, for none ever returned. Now, one fateful day, the sorcerer arrived at the door of a man who had three beautiful daughters. Disguised as a feeble old man, he carried a large pack basket on his back, seemingly collecting charitable offerings. And this is why we don't answer our doors, people. Mm-hmm. Here's your macabre public service announcement. Lock those doors, peep through your blinds, but for the love of God, don't answer the door.
Yeah.
But I digress. So back to our story. The old man pretended to be starving, and he asked for a bit of food to eat. And when the eldest daughter brought him bread, he simply touched her. And with this simple touch, she was immediately compelled by some kind of magic to leap into his pack basket. With powerful strides, the sorcerer carried her away to his house, hidden deep within the dark and foreboding forest. The house was filled with splendor, which was a stark contrast to the sinister force that inhabited it. The sorcerer said, whispering in her ear, as I can only imagine was a very creepy voice. My dear, you will like it here with me. You will have everything your heart desires. Suddenly, the sky had turned into a sugar daddy. And for days, the woman lived in luxury. But then he said, I must leave for a short time. So he gave her the keys of the house and he said, you can go anywhere you want. Look at everything in the house except for this one room. And if you do, you will face certain death. And he also said, I'm going to give you this weird egg. And you have to carry it with you everywhere you go. If you lose it, a great misfortune will follow you. Okay, weird. But I didn't write this story. The Grimm brothers did. So now I'm not judging anyone at this point in the story. But it didn't sound like a terrible setup. I mean, she was basically abducted, which is not cool. But right. I don't know the situation she was in. She was the oldest daughter at this point in history. When we know being the oldest daughter and you're unwed, your prospects are not looking so good. Mm-mm. Trust me, I'm at that age. I know. So she's whisked away, living a life of luxury. She has a sugar daddy. Mm-hmm. And he says, you know, just don't go into this one room and carry this egg around. So what do you do? Do you think you could avoid looking in the room?
Oh, yeah.
Or
definitely.
Or would curiosity get the better of you? Depends. Blair says she could do it, people.
Yep. I could. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a digger. I'm not nosy. I don't like, even here, I don't even dig through my fiance's things. And if I would have, I probably would have found my ring, to be honest.
But see, if someone specifically tells me not to do something, that's where it gets me. That's where I get the itch. Mm-hmm. If you specifically tell me not to do something, I'm probably going to need to scratch that itch.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, the woman promised to be careful, but as soon as he left, curiosity killed the cat. And she went exploring, marveling at the splendor of the house, and eventually she arrived at the forbidden door. And despite the fears that she had, she looked at the key, and unable to resist, she unlocked the door. What she saw inside was worse than what I imagine could only be described as a serial killer's playground. In the middle of the room was a large blood-stained basin filled with the dismembered remains of a bunch of young women. There was a wooden block with a glistening axe that laid nearby, stained with probably these women's blood. And in her horror, she dropped the egg that she was carrying into the basin, splattering it with blood. And in her frenzy, she tried to scoop up the egg and clean it, but no matter what she did, she could not get the blood off of the egg. And of course, Sugar Daddy came back and immediately demanded the keys and wanted to see the egg. And it was, of course, stained with the blood. He knew instantly that she had disobeyed him. He said, you have entered the forbidden chamber, and now you will return there. So he dragged her by her hair, cut off her head, dismembered her body, and added her to his collection.
That sounds exactly like the tale of Bluebeard. Did you ever read that one?
No.
Oh, so basically, this young girl still lives with her mom. This older gentleman comes to kind of start courting her. They know that he's very well off. They can tell, like, there's a darker side to him, but they think, oh, well, he's just maybe eccentric and mysterious as, like, an older, richer gentleman, you know? So on their wedding night, they go back to his mansion. They, you know, don't really necessarily have him a wedding night or whatever, because he's like, here's all these fine things, but I have to leave. I won't be back for a fortnight, you know. You can go wherever you want in this beautiful house, but you can't go into this one room. And she ends up making her way to that room when he's gone. And it was in the tale, it's almost like it was a test as well about how she is.
The loyalty. Mm-hmm, yeah.
Because it's almost instantaneous that she opens the door, see what's inside, and he's just somewhere on the grounds, probably like, it's been about 15 minutes.
Yeah. So,
you know, but she, yeah, there were different torture devices in this room. And yeah, and like they were all of his wives that mysteriously died that people knew about are still in these devices. Yeah. It's a really, really creepy tale.
I feel like there's a lot of modern movies that play on this theme too.
Mm-hmm.
About these secret rooms and stuff. So
right.
I don't know what it is that about this idea that endures, but
right.
But yeah. Ugh. So basically the same fate happened to the second sister. And then when it came to the third sister, she was not as naive as the other. She was more clever and cautious. And for whatever reason, there was a little voice inside her head that said, this egg is important. So I'm going to actually put this egg somewhere else. And then I'm going to go look inside the room.
Get it, girl.
She kept the egg hidden. And when she got inside the room, she found her sister's dismembered bodies and somehow had the ability to reassemble them in this story.
What?
And when she reassembled them, they miraculously came back to life.
Hmm.
And they, you know, embraced their sister. And now, let me just say, can you imagine this story playing out on TV?
No.
Like how gross all this would be. And like, I don't know. They'd have to like throw in some serious magic to make this not be disgusting.
Right.
For the bodies to be reassembled and ugh.
Yeah.
For them to not be very Frankenstein-ish.
Right.
But so she did her magic or whatever, and then the sorcerer came back and he saw that the egg was fine and there was no blood on it. And then he was like, oh, well, you passed my test, so you can be my bride. We'll get married. And because she had passed the test, this somehow gave her control over this man. She now had complete power over him. She could command him, and he was unable to resist her commands.
Mm.
She could give him orders. She had total control. So she demanded that he take a basket of gold to her parents. And while he did this, she prepared for her and her sister's escape. The sorcerer unknowingly carried her sisters hidden under the gold, and he struggled through the forest. Whenever he tried to rest, they called out, or the sister called out, I see you resting, move on. Believing his bride was watching, he continued until he reached the parents' house. Back at his house, the bride was preparing a gruesome deception. She had placed a skull adorned with jewelry and flowers in the attic window to appear as if she were watching. She then dipped herself in honey, rolled in feathers, and transformed herself into what looked like an unrecognizable bird. Why? I don't know. but that is where the story gets its name, the Fitcher's Bird. As she fled the house, wedding guests met her asking, Fitcher's Bird, where are you coming from? And she replied, from Fitcher's house. The bride is looking out the attic window. The sorcerer, seeing the skull, believed it was his bride and greeted it warmly. Meanwhile, her brothers and relatives summoned for help arrived. They locked the sorcerer and guest inside the house and set it on fire. The sorcerer and his companions burned to death. His reign of terror finally had ended.
Dang!
Yeah.
Oh, dang. If it didn't get dark before.
Why she needed to roll herself in honey and dress up as a bird, I don't know, because she already had control over this dude, so.
Right?
But I don't know.
That's so. And that, I feel like that takes a long time, too. Not like, quick, roll in honey and get some feathers. We're about to be birds.
Yeah.
You know. Throw a cloak on, start running.
And then we're going to set everything on fire.
Yeah.
Why not just tell him to go in the house and not leave? And then just set it on fire. I don't know.
But, right?
Hey, we didn't write these stories.
It's true. It's true.
What's with the dismemberment, people?
Right? Oh. Well, it's going to continue to be funny. Oh.
Now. Okay, because it's a running theme, I think, in all the stories.
Yeah.
As we laugh, like, it's funny.
Yeah.
It's funny, exactly. But it's not funny.
So I'm going to read this next one in its entirety, because it's short. It's like a page and a half.
You've got the actual book for listeners who can't see.
Yes.
It's a giant book. Grimm's Complete Fairy Tales. Nice. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful book, too.
Thank you. Yeah. Oh, this book's a sexy. I have a thing about nice looking books.
I like big books and I cannot lie.
You other nerds can't deny.
When a book walks in with a, I don't know, big
gilded
bound.
Page.
A gilded page and a big
and
bound.
And another spot in your face, you get sprung.
Yes.
Oh, well, this is when we talk about the sausage.
Oh, yay.
So I have read this so many times, and it's just, it's funny to me when you think about where did this fucking originate from? Why do we have talking sausages? but, you know, this one is called The Mouse, the Bird, and the Sausage.
Okay.
Once upon a time, a mouse, a bird, and a sausage became companions, kept house together, lived well and happily with each other, and wonderfully increased their possessions. The bird's work was to fly every day into the forest and bring back wood. The mouse had to carry water, light the fire, and lay the table. But the sausage had to cook. He who is too well off is always longing for something new. One day, therefore, the bird met with another bird on the way, to whom it related its excellent circumstances and boasted of them. The other bird, however, called it a poor simpleton for his hard work, but said that the two at home had good times. For when the mouse had made her fire and carried her water, she went into her little room to rest until they called her to lay the table. The sausage stayed by the pot, saw that the food was cooking well, and then, when it was nearly time for dinner, it rolled itself once or twice through the broth or vegetables, and then they were buttered, salted, and ready. When the bird came home and laid his burden down, they sat down to dinner, and after they had their meal, they slept their fill till next morning, and that was a splendid life. Next day, the bird, prompted by the other bird, would go no more into the wood, saying that he had been servant long enough, and had been made a fool by them, and that they must change about for once, and try to arrange it in another way. And though the mouse and the sausage also begged more earnestly, the bird would have his way, and said it must be tried. They drew lots about it, and the lot fell on the sausage, who was to carry wood. And the mouse became cook. Sausage came wood, huh? And the bird was to fetch the water. What happened? The little sausage went out toward the wood. The little bird lighted the fire. The mouse stayed by the pot and waited alone until little sausage came home and brought wood for the next day. But the little sausage stayed so long on the road that they both feared something was amiss, and the bird flew out a little way in the air to meet it. Not far off, however, it met a dog on the road, who had fallen on the poor sausage as lawful booty and had seized and swallowed it. The bird charged the dog with an act of barefaced robbery, but it was in vain to speak, for the dog said he found forged letters on the sausage a capital offense, and now suddenly the sausage is quite political. The bird sadly took up the wood, flew home, and related that what he had seen and heard. They were more troubled, but agreed to do their best and remain together. The bird, therefore, laid the cloth. The mouse prepared the food and wanted to dress it and to get into the pot, as the sausage used to do, and roll and creep among the vegetables to mix them. But before... That's the other thing. This sausage was the cook. He basically fondled everybody's veggies. He was political.
He was putting himself at risk every time he got in there, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that sausage, I tell you. I don't know. But before she got into the midst of them, she was stopped and lost her skin and hair and left in the attempt. And life in the attempt, I'm sorry. When the bird came to carry up the dinner, no cook was there. And in its distress, the bird threw the wood there and here, and called and searched, but no cook was to be found. Owing to its carelessness, the wood caught fire, so that a conflagration ensued. The bird hastened to fetch water, and then the bucket dropped from his claws into the well, and he fell down with it, and could not recover himself, but had to drown there. The end. Moral of the story, that sausage was touching too much. He was dipping where he wasn't supposed to be. I had to throw that one in there because it's just one of my favorites. Like, reading that growing up, I was like, all right, we hear a lot of stories about talking animals, but you're gonna give me a fucking talking sausage? All right, okay, it's fine.
Well, I have one more for you, friends. And I did this one a little bit different. This one was an old story that the tale went back, I think they said, like 2,000 years.
Oh, wow.
So I did a retelling and I modernized it.
Ooh.
So it's the same plot, but in a modern version.
I'm excited.
All right. Are we ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In a quiet, affluent suburb, Marcus and Evelyn live in a beautifully restored Victorian house. Because what other kind of house are you living in when we tell a story on Macabre? Despite their wealth and happiness, their hearts ache for a child. Evelyn spends countless hours in their immaculate garden beneath a grand juniper tree, often lost in thought. One chilly winter afternoon, Evelyn is preparing a fruit salad. As she slices an apple, she accidentally cuts her finger. Blood drips on the snow-covered ground. She watches it soak into the white, whispering, "If only I had a child, as pure as the snow and as vibrant as my blood." That night, she dreams of a child, her heart filled with a strange contentment. As the seasons change, Evelyn's garden flourishes. Spring arrives, filling the air with the scent of blooming flowers and the chirping of birds. By summer, Evelyn's wish comes true. She gives birth to a son, Michael. Tragically, Evelyn dies during childbirth. Marcus buries her beneath the juniper tree, her tears watering the ground. Years pass, and Marcus remarries. His new wife, Linda, brings her own daughter, Clara, into the household. Linda adores Clara, but harbors a deep resentment towards Michael, seeing him as a threat to Clara's inheritance. Under the juniper tree's watchful branches, the family life grows increasingly tense. One stormy evening, as Michael returns from school, Linda, consumed by envy and hatred, lures him into the basement. Michael, would you like an apple? She asks sweetly, but her eyes are cold. As she reaches for the apple, Linda slams the heavy lid of an old chest down on him. Michael's life is violently taken, and his blood mixes with the apples. Panic-stricken, Linda decides to hide her crime. She ties Michael's head back onto his body with a scarf and places him on a chair, an apple in his hand. Clara finds him unresponsive, is terrified, and runs to Linda. Mother, something's wrong with Michael. Linda pretends she's shocked. Instructing Clara to push Michael, his head falls off again, causing Clara to scream in horror. Linda, driven mad by guilt and fear, cooks Michael's remains into a stew, because what else do you do? When Marcus returns home, he is served the stew. He eats it heartily, unaware of the gruesome truth. Clara, sobbing uncontrollably, watches in silence, her tears mixing with the meal. After the meal, Clara gathers Michael's bones, guided by an unseen force, buries them beneath the juniper tree. Suddenly, the tree comes alive, its branches twisting and contorting. From the tree's heart, a mist arises, forming into a radiant bird. It flies away, singing a haunting melody. My mother, she killed me. My father, he ate me. My sister Clara gathered all my bones, laid them beneath the juniper tree. Tweet, tweet, what a beautiful bird am I. The bird flies across town, its song drawing the attention of a jeweler. Entranced by the bird's beauty and sorrowful song, the jeweler offers a golden chain in exchange for hearing the song again. The bird accepts and continues its journey, acquiring a pair of red shoes from a shoemaker and a millstone from the mill workers. The bird returns to the family's home, perching on the juniper tree. Its song echoes through the house. Marcus, feeling an inexplicable joy, steps outside and receives the golden chain. Clara follows, receiving the red shoes. Linda, driven to madness by the song and her guilt, rushes out screaming. The bird releases the millstone, crushing Linda instantly. As the dust settles, Michael miraculously reappears, restored to life. He, Marcus, and Clara embrace, the horror of the past dissolving. The juniper tree stands tall and serene, its branches swaying gently. Inside the house, they sit together, their bond now stronger than ever, ready to start anew. The bird, with its purpose fulfilled, takes one last flight around the house, its song now one of hope and renewal, flies off into the horizon as the family watches. The juniper tree now stands a silent guardian over their home.
Oh. That's crazy.
How messed up is that story?
That's so messed up.
The original version is like so much worse.
Oh, I bet.
Like, chop up your child. Your husband's child.
Mm-hmm.
Feed it. Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah. Just watch it happen. Yeah. No.
Just so.
No. No. Yeah.
And then suddenly, everything is just fine.
Yeah.
Comes back to life. All is well.
Yep. We're good. Karma.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. The Grimm brothers were something else.
Yeah. Agreed. We time for some macabre morsels?
Yeah. I think so.
All right. I found some interesting things. So, speaking of stories, we're going to come back to some of the more well-known ones and talk about their even worse origins.
Great.
Oh, yeah. But let's start with a little more nerding for a second. So there's something called the Grimm's Law, which, according to Britannica Encyclopedia, they describe it as, quote, description of the regular correspondence in Indo-European languages formulated by Jakob Grimm in his Deutsche Grammatik, 1819 through 1837, Germanic grammar. It pointed out prominent correlation between the Germanic and other Indo-European languages of Europe and Western Asia. This was something that kind of helped meld and really research different things in different cultures to kind of put them together to realize that some of these countries basically fit together with their cultures like puzzle pieces that wasn't really known before because of how much digging they were doing into the past to find some of those ancient texts, which I thought was kind of cool. All right, I'm done nerding. Let's talk about more story stuff, because it gets creepy. Like, we talked about creepy stuff, but these stories, believe it or not, when they were collected and recounted, published, they were not intended for children. These accounts were comical, absurd, grotesque, you name it, it was there. Everything from chopping up kids to talking sausages. We had it all. They portrayed people and how they handled their hardships, despite how gruesome they would get. I mean, this is just kind of a reflection on the times they came from. It was just a reflection, basically, of how difficult conditions were for people and how they managed to survive and live through them. It wasn't just to tell a story. They were lessons to be taught with each tale and morals to understand. Now, remember that when we talk about some of the origins of these fucked up tales. There were some majority of, well, okay, we should back up, because this is a very interesting fact. Their literature was so popular in Germany that they became only second to the Bible with book purchases and having, like, books in possessions. They were number two. Yeah.
On the bestsellers list?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. The old bestsellers list. There were some major changes, believe it or not, that the brothers had made to some of these stories to lighten the mood. Because if those weren't dark enough for you, there were even ones that were darker than that, that they thought was too dark, which says a lot, and that they were too controversial. So why don't we talk about some of those? Let's talk about some changes. Let's start with Red Riding Hood. Some of you probably know the tale of Little Red. So in the original, Little Red is consumed by the wolf in her grandmother's bed. She threw her clothes into the fire, and the wolf bedded her before eating her.
Oh.
Yep. Yep.
That was edited out?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay.
They definitely, they adapted that. They made it so that Red was saved by her grandma and the huntsman, because that was pretty dark.
Yeah.
In the origin of Cinderella, the stepsisters who tried fitting their foot in the shoe to be like, oh, it was me you danced with, their stepmother actually cut off parts of their feet.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Gross.
Yeah.
So gross.
That, right? So it would fit in the shoe.
You will fit in the shoe.
You will fit in the shoe. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. She did it to both of her daughters. So at the end, when the prince comes and he realizes who Cinderella truly was and put the slipper on the right girl, not only did they have to have the shame of trying to be schemey, have their feet cut off, that wasn't enough. They had birds that came, flew down, and started pecking out the stepsister's eyes. Yep. And that's just to name a couple. We'll talk about...
I feel like you could do a whole segment on just, like...
what the origins are.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Well, it gets a little weirder. So a really good resource that if you want to check out more of these, you absolutely should. Obviously, we're doing, like, a skimming of some of the things, but the National Endowment Department for the Humanities is a really good resource if you want to check out where some of these origins came from and some of the true origins and how they changed these. Because some of these are pretty freaking dark. So this next section is directly from the National Endowment Department of Humanities section that they have just for the Grimm brothers. So they say, quote, Wilhelm Grimm also concealed a later scene in the first edition when Rapunzel reveals that she apparently had sex with the prince and was impregnated by him.
That's yeah, they new. Left that out for Disney.
Uh-huh. Other differences in the editions shown. In the first Snow White, her mother was her mother, not her stepmother.
Okay.
And it was her mother that wants to kill her out of envy. In earlier tales, Snow White also had a sister, and that was taken out in a lot of later editions. The terse tale called The Wild Man, in which a mysterious, powerful king helps a boy who has helped him escape from a cage, is embellished and transformed into a very long, elaborate tale with the title Iron Hans. The Wild Man in the 1812 version is more kind than stern, Iron Hans, who determines that the young man's destiny in a coming-of-age tale, likewise, the devil in the green coat, is given a new title, Bearskin, and a totally new beginning and meaning to the tale. In the 1812 tale, the Grimms portrayed an oppressed, timid young man abandoned in the woods by his brothers. He accepts the devil's green coat that will enable him to survive for 7 years if he doesn't shave or clean himself. And in the end, the moral of the story that was never adapted was the devil saved him, and he relied on the devil to survive. And this was kind of a weird contrast to what they were trying to portray with, like, morals in general. So yeah. That was kind of showing, like, some of the original origins. It was showing that the dark side was the way to solve your problems, basically. Right.
They wouldn't want that to be advertised.
Right. And that's only some of the examples of the darker side of these stories, because some of them got pretty dark. Not sure if you know the fairy tale list that we have because of the Grimm brothers, but let me tell you a few. We got Snow White, Rapunzel, Cinderella, Briar Rose, Hansel and Gretel, Little Red Riding Hood, The Frog Prince, Rumpelstiltskin, The Golden Goose, Puss in Boots, and so many more. These are like staples.
Yeah. Most of Disney's catalog.
Yeah.
Basically.
Basically. They're like, let's just go through the Grimm catalog. I'm waiting for that talking sausage to pop up. Oh, wait. That was in a different movie. Never mind.
Yeah, it was.
And of course, like we've said in other episodes, pop culture would totally not be the same if it weren't for the efforts of the Grimm brothers. Our culture would look a lot different today. Mm-hmm. Their passion and hard work has left a lasting impact on the entire world and will continue to do so for generations to come. Woof. That was...
Might have trouble sleeping tonight.
Right? Ugh. Like, part of me is very curious now and wants to go back and try to find some of these more ancient texts to be like, You always think about fairy tales having, like, a moral ending or, like, a moral lesson, even if the ending doesn't turn out the way you want it to.
Mm-hmm.
But to know that there are fairy tales out there that are, like, the other side of the coin.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. But that's the Brothers Grimm.
Yeah. Not all fairy tales have happy endings, people.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Yeah. And that's why it's on Macabre.
Yeah.
Well, listeners, if you have any stories that you would like to share, fairy tales or not, We would love to hear from you. And we love what you send us. And please keep them coming, because we have some cool stuff in store for you later this season because you have submitted your stories. So thank you for that. Keep them coming. And who knows? You just might make it on the macabre status, hometown macabre status, or alphabet status. You don't know? We have one coming up for the alphabet status that we literally just had our minds blown like last week about. That's coming. So just wait to hear that crazy freaking story. You can send your stories to us at any time to thatsomacabre@gmail.com. You can record your story for us on our website, macabrepod.com, through the SpeakPipe. You can also buy us a stiff drink over there. If you want a little more from us, we are on Patreon. We have a fantabulous Facebook group where you can hang out with more of our amazing listeners. And they're hilarious over there. I cannot get enough of the stuff that they post over there. It's hilarious. If you like what you're hearing, please leave a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. We do love to hear from you. We don't just say this for our health. It really means a lot to us. And also, do us a favor. Tell your friend where you're hearing all of your cool historical facts from, your gruesome, nasty facts.
And your macabre morsels.
Yes, especially the ones about syphilis. I mean, do you even...
Oh, that's on the rise, by the way. Confirmed.
What?
Confirmed. I have stories to tell you. Ooh. Off of air. Yes.
No.
Yes.
Oh, no.
I have stories to tell you.
Oh,
off air.
No.
Wrap it before you tap it, people.
Yeah, wrap it before syphilis, you tap it.
Syphilis is on the rise. Here's your macabre PSA. It has been confirmed, and it is affecting people's brains. On that note...
Oh my
gosh.
Wrap
it before you tap it, and we'll see you next time.
Yes. Have fun.
Bye.
Be safe. Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.